Part 6, Chapter 7. They were aloft at last, flying just to the east of north, rising rapidly to an altitude of over 10 miles. Turl loomed over the control panel, silent and withdrawn. Johnny sat at the co-pilot console, the seatbelt wrapped around him twice, air mask tending to mist. It was growing very cold in the flight cab. They were late getting off because Turl had personally gone over every fitting and unit of the plane as though suspicious that someone might have sabotaged it. The actual ship number was 18 digits long and only ended in 91. It was an old ship, a cast-off from some war on some other planet, and it showed its scars in dents and sears. It had a forward flight compartment, like any freighter, but it was armored and fitted with batteries of air-to-air and air-to-ground blast guns. The huge body of the plane, now empty, was fitted to carry not ore, but 50 company attack troops. There were huge benches, bins for supplies, racks for their blast guns. There were many ports, all armored. The plane had not carried troops or even been flown for ages. Seeing that breathe gas compression would be off in the compartment, Johnny had thought it might be better to ride there. But Turl put him in the co-pilot seat. Now he was glad. This altitude probably had little air in it, and the cold was seeping into the cab with icy fingers. Below them, the mountains and plains spread out, apparently not moving at any great speed, even though the plane was well above hypersonic. Soon, Johnny knew he was looking at the top of the world. Pale green, misty sea and white fastnesses of ice were all across the northern horizon. They were not going to cross the North Pole, but nearly. The chattering console computer was rolling itself out a tape of their successive positions. Johnny looked at it. They were turning in a curve to head more easterly.
"Where are we going?"
said Johnny. Turl didn't answer for some time. Then he yanked an intergalactic mining chart of the planet from a seat pocket and threw it at Johnny.
"You're looking at the world, animal. It's round."
Johnny unfolded the chart.
"I know it's round. Where are we going?"
"Well, we're not going up there,"
said Turl, pointing a talon toward the north.
"That's all water in spite of its looking solid. Just ice. Don't never land there. You'd freeze to death."
Johnny had a chart open. Turl had drawn a red, curving course line from the area of departure, up across a continent, then across a large island, and then down to the top of another island. Typical of a mining map, it was all in numbers and without names. He translated rapidly in his head back to Chinko geography. Using ancient names, the course lay up over Canada, across the top of Greenland, past Iceland, and down to the north tip of Scotland. On the mine map, Scotland was 89-72-13. After punching in a new series of coordinates, Turl put the ship on automatic and reached back of his seat for a container of Kerbango. He slurped some into his container cover and chewed it down.
"Animal,"
said Turl above the roar of the ship.
"I'm about to recruit 50 man-things."
"I thought we were almost gone."
"No, Ratbrain. There are some groups in various inaccessible places on the planet."
"And, having gotten them, we're going to take them back to the defense base."
Turl looked at him and nodded.
"And you're going to help."
"If I'm going to help, maybe we better talk over how we are going to do this."
Turl shrugged.
"Simple. There's a village up in the mountains where you see that red circle. This is a battle plane. We just dive in with stun blasts and then walk around and load the ones we want aboard."
Johnny looked at him.
"No."
Hostile, Turl said.
"You promised."
"I know what I promised. I'm saying no because your plan won't work."
"These guns can be set to stun. They don't have to be put on a kill setting."
"Maybe you better tell me what these men are going to do."
Why, you're going to train them on machines. I thought you could figure that out yourself, Ratbrain. You've been ferrying the machines. So what's wrong with this plan?
They won't cooperate.
With a frown, Turl studied that. Leverage. Leverage. It was true that he wouldn't have leverage.
We'll tell them that if they don't cooperate, we'll shoot up their village for keeps.
Probably.
Said Johnny. He looked at Turl with disgust and laughed. It stung Turl. Johnny was sitting back now, looking at the map. Johnny saw that they were avoiding a mine site located in the southwest of England. He wagered with himself that Turl would come down to Wavetop in the last run into Scotland.
Why won't it work?
Demanded Turl.
If I've got to train them, you better let me walk in and get them.
Turl barked a laugh.
Ha! Animal! If you walked into that village, they would drill you like a sieve. Suicide! What a rat brain!
If you want any help from me,
said Johnny, offering the map,
you'll land up here on this mountain and let me walk in the last 5 miles.
And then what will you do?
Johnny did not want to tell him.
I'll get you 50 men.
With a shake of his head, Turl said,
Too risky! I didn't spend over a year training you just to have to start all over!
Then he realized he might have said too much. He looked suspiciously at Johnny, thinking, The animal must not consider itself valuable.
Crap! All right, animal. You can go ahead and get yourself killed. What's one animal, more or less? Where's the mountain?
Well short of northern Scotland, Turl brought the personnel freighter down to Wavetop. They skimmed the grey-green water, eventually roared up the side of a cliff, shot inland, battering the scrub and trees, and came to a halt under the shoulder of a mountain. Johnny won his own bet. Turl had avoided the mine site in the south.